Well, hi, everybody. It's our noontime show on October 18th, 2017. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio as the music abruptly ends. And thank you so much for listening today. We have a really cool guy on, an Oregon fifth grade teacher named Doug Robertson, bills himself as the weird teacher. And you can Google that and see all the great stuff he does. All right, over on the web, et cetera. He's also an author. And we're going to talk about the creative aspects, so to speak, of mentoring new and student teachers. It's going to be a lot of fun with Doug, and I'm looking forward to having him on. We're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org. We're going to tweet it out over at EduTalk Radio. Please follow us over there. And you can follow Doug at The Weird Teacher. And also, we have a new Facebook page. The Facebook page is EduTalk Radio, facebook.com/EduTalkRadio. Go over there, friend us. We like friends. We'll appreciate that. The old Facebook still works. All right, but we just made a little change to make it a little easier to find on Facebook. Okay, without further ado, the one and only Doug Robertson. Hi, Doug, from Oregon, no less, all the way across the country.
That's right. Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. Call me Larry Doug, and I'm in Maine, by the way. I can't get much further away from you unless I was in Florida.
That's true.
Right? It's a long haul. You live in a beautiful place. And, by the way, I got to tell everybody something. I was over on Doug's post, and he just, it's called The Weird Teacher. It's at blogspot.com. And the post you just did on the whole Harvey Weinstein thing and the women in business and in teaching and all that, I thought it was very good.
Thank you. Yeah, I feel like we don't talk about these kind of real world issues enough in education. We would much rather have the safe conversation about homework again. But
yeah.
If it's happening in business and it's happening all over Twitter, then it's obviously happening in schools too. So we need to be talking about that kind of thing.
Good man. Here, and that hashtag on Twitter for that the women who have been abused or harassment, whatever, is Me Too, hashtag Me Too. I think I'm the last person in the world to tell everybody that, but it's out there, and it's really key stuff. So thank you, Doug, for bringing that up. I appreciate it. Everybody, nobody's waiting at Education Talk Radio to hear the update on the news. Okay, but I wanted to get that in there. Doug, student teaching, you must have 13. Actually, there's a great line in my cheat sheet. It says, Doug Robertson is a fifth grade teacher in his 13th year. And I'm thinking, is Doug 13 years old? But I think you meant 13 years of teaching.
Yeah. Yeah, this is my 13th year of teaching. It's kind of hard to believe that it's already been 13 years. It's crazy, right?
Yeah, it goes quick, my friend. It goes really quick. And you're in, let me get this right, you're at Powell Valley Elementary. I assume the kids go to middle school the next year.
Yeah, I teach. Yeah, the way where I am in Oregon works, fifth grade is the top of the heap for elementary, and then the kids go to middle school.
Cool. And where is Gresham Barlow? I assume that there's two towns, but where is it?
We're just called Gresham. I'm not positive why it's called Gresham Barlow.
Oh,
but we're right outside of Portland, like 20 minutes.
Oh, nice.
To get to downtown Portland from here.
Okay, so it's a suburban Portland school district. Okay, great. That's what I wanted to know. So talk about your experiences with student teaching. I'm curious about this. Not yours as a student teacher, but how you've mentored people. This is really cool. What got you so interested?
Yeah, I've mentored a couple of student teachers. When I taught in Hawaii for 6 years, I had two student teachers. And the way it worked there was I had Bethany for half of my school year. And then she left to another placement, and I got Matt for half of my school year. So I got to work with him for a really extended period of time. Some of the other mentor teachers that I've talked to, apparently you only get a couple of weeks in some places.
Really?
So I was really,
really
lucky.
These are student teachers?
Yeah.
These are they're not teachers who have been hired. These are student teachers.
These are student teachers, people at the very end of their university programs. Yeah.
Wait, I got to ask this, because when I was a student teacher, low these many years ago, okay, it was for a whole semester of college. We literally did not have school, okay? We didn't go to college. We were in the classroom doing student teaching. And when I was a teacher, it was the same thing. Now you're telling me you talk to people that you only did 2 weeks of student teaching?
I don't think – not 2 weeks, but not like an entire – I don't think an entire semester was – is the norm for some. But I'm not, you know,
wow.
It's different everywhere.
And where were these kids? From the University of Hawaii?
Yeah, these were UH students. So they would
Hawaii.
Come to me.
Yeah.
And they would be with me for, I think, 3 days a week. And then the other 2 days, they would be doing university stuff. They would be going to classes.
Wow.
And then the next year after that, Bethany had to do a whole year. They had to do a whole year.
Oh, my gosh.
To get her master's or something. So then
like
I had her 5 days a week. She was basically a co-teacher for me. And it was so cool to have a student teacher who I'd grown with and had a relationship with come back and spend an entire year with me. You really feel like at the end of that you've mentored somebody and they have become their own teacher. It was super rewarding.
I hope they did I hope they stayed in Hawaii because I know there's a huge teacher shortage in Hawaii. Huge. That's probably number one.
We can talk for hours about why that is. It's not because Hawaii is bad. It's because milk is $17.
How much milk? For how much milk? $17
for a gallon of milk. I'm being...
You're not being serious.
I'm exaggerating for humorous effect.
Thank you. How much is milk?
Yeah, but I don't remember. It's $4 or $5 bucks. It's real.
Mm.
Somebody's going to correct me. It's the internet. Somebody's like, you're totally wrong. And thank you, person.
The point
the
is, the cost of living is high and the teacher salaries are not great. And it's one school district on the whole island. I'm sure the school, the pay is the same throughout all the islands. And it's just incredible. It's a real miss. Yeah. And good for you for teaching over there for a number of years. Okay. Why do you think you learned a lot? Why do you think it's important for teachers to take on student teachers? Well, most teachers like to do that, but I'm curious your point of view.
I have so many thoughts. So the first reason that it's so important to take on a student teacher is because, and this is not really the most important reason, but it is a good reason, these people are in their programs anyway. The university is looking for mentor teachers anyway. So if you say no, you're putting this enormous burden on the university and on these poor college students who just need to get into somebody's classroom. My student teacher last year, she got placed with me 2 days before school started. They had been looking and looking and looking. So she was totally stressed out before she came to me. And that's like a real basic reason to take a student teacher. The more important reasons to take a student teacher are things like you need to be thinking about strengthening our profession. Now, a lot of teachers might say, well, I'm not doing anything special that I could hand over to a student teacher. And that kind of thing makes me so frustrated because if you get rid of the teacher part of
something special every day.
You're saying, right. And if you get rid of the teacher part of that sentence, you're saying, I'm not doing anything special for a student. Okay. Now, nobody would actually say that out loud, so we need to reconsider, like, you are doing something special. You just need to believe in that and let that come out. If you want something done right, do it yourself. So I don't know how this sounds. It sounds super egotistical or whatever, but I feel like I'm a pretty good teacher. I feel like I got a good handle
probably
on this.
You are. Probably a terrific teacher.
And so I want to have student teachers so that I can influence them and help them come into their own in a way that I believe they should be teaching. So not so much I want them to leave my classroom and teach like me. I want them to leave their classroom and think about teaching like I do. I want them to leave and feel like they can be creative and take risks and use technology in exciting ways. And that's what I want them to learn from me. So that's why you should take a student teacher, because you are strengthening the profession as a whole. You're making everybody better by making this student teacher better. It's a ripple it's a pebble in the pond, and you're creating all of these ripples. One of the things I tell my student teachers when they're done, right before they leave and they're free and they're not in my classroom anymore, I tell them in 5 or 6 or 7 years, when you feel comfortable, you have to go to university and you have to beg for a student teacher. You have to pay this forward. Because in that way, I feel like I'm I'm helping to grow the profession bigger and bigger. And if I take enough student teachers and enough of my student teachers take student teachers, then pretty soon I will have built a weird teacher army, and then I will be able to take over
right.
education.
The WTA, the weird teacher army,
weirdteacher.blogspot.com.
You know, it's you said something that really struck me, that the schools, and you said 2 days before school started, the teacher was assigned to, the young person was assigned to you. Are people turning down student teachers? You must have noticed that somewhere along the line. Are people turning them down? Because I remember when I was teaching, I don't remember anybody ever turning one down. Maybe I just didn't know. But I had a couple of student teachers, yeah.
I don't know if people are turning down student teachers or just not asking for student teachers. Because that relationship is kind of weird. Sometimes the university will go to the administrator, and then the administrator will go to the principals, and then the principals ask the teachers. And a lot of the time it's really easy as a teacher to say, I can't this year. I'm so busy. I'm in a testing grade, or I have all of this stuff to do. And it's really easy to kind of try to step away from that with a lot of really good excuses, because we are all very busy. And I am in a testing grade, so there's a little bit of stress associated with, I'm going to give my classroom to this person who is totally untested and totally green. And then at the end of the year, my students still have to take the same big test at the end as everybody else. And what if my numbers look bad because I took a student teacher? But then you realize, oh, wait, the test is the least important thing in the world as far as I'm concerned. What's more important is preparing this teacher and giving my students the benefit of having two voices in the room instead of one. If we're going to talk about differentiated instruction, my student teacher is teaching things differently than I'm teaching things. So some of those kids that I'm not quite reaching, she might be reaching. And then just as one more thinking really far ahead piece, these student teachers are going to end up in someone's classroom anyway. They're going to go through their student teaching program. Hopefully the next year they're going to get a job. So if you're not going to do it for yourself, to make yourself better as a teacher, because it forces reflection, it makes you a better teacher to be a mentor teacher. If you're not going to do it for the student teacher, to help the student teacher be better, then do it for the kids that are going to be sitting in that teacher's room next year, who are going to have a teacher that if you'd have taken them, they would be more prepared than they are now. Am I making sense with that?
You are without question. Obviously you're making sense, but I have a question. How do you, and you said it, you work in a testing grade, okay, for the standardized test, so to speak. All right.
Yeah.
How do you monitor the student teacher to make sure that they're covering what needs to be covered? Because obviously you have all good intentions, but you can't let the kids down. And not every student teacher is a great teacher, let's be honest. So how do you monitor that?
That's my job. I'm in the room with the student teacher. When they're going to teach a lesson, we're planning it together, even if it's coming from the university. And the university is saying, you have to teach a math lesson in the next 2 weeks. Then we have developed a relationship by that point. The student teacher and I have had lots and lots of conversations by that point about how we're going to work together and how we're going to plan together. So she or he will come to me. I've got to teach a math lesson. Cool. Let's look at the math book. Let's pick something good. Let's build it together. And then eventually, near the middle and the end of the year, when they are building their own lessons, I'm still not like, okay, go. They're still coming to me. This is my lesson.
Sure.
Read it over. Cool. Looks good. Have you thought about incorporating some movement in here? Oh, that's a good idea. Okay, I'll do that. Now go. And then I'm still in the room. One of the things that I do every single time my student teacher is in front of the room is I make a T chart. I make a two-column chart. And on one column, I write likes at the top. And on the other column, I write suggestions. And I write suggestions because dislikes is too negative for me. And then as she's teaching, I'm just kind of keeping notes. Oh, I like that you said this to this kid. I like your movement right now. I like how you explained this. Suggestions. Kids have been sitting for a really long time. You didn't explain that very well. We could do this. And then at the end of the day, I have this set of notes that we sit down after the kids are gone, and I say, okay, tell me how you thought the lesson went. And she says, well, I did this, and I think I did this, and I feel like I did this. And I said, okay, cool. Now I'm going to tell you what I saw. And I saw this and this and this, and I think we can do this and this and this. And that feedback loop, it makes such a huge difference. And that makes me responsible. That helps check that box that you were just talking about. How am I sure things are being taught? Because it's my job. It's my classroom. And she, that's where the title of the new book comes from. She is, my student teacher is my classroom of one. She's my classroom of one.
I'm glad you brought that up. Doug's written books, okay? And at three, if I'm help me out. I want to get this across for you, okay? There's one book called He's the Weird Teacher. Is that the name of one book?
Yes. The first one is called He's the Weird Teacher.
That's you, okay? And the second one is the Teaching Text, right? The Teaching Text. Is that correct?
Yes. It's The Teaching Text, You're Welcome, is the whole title.
And what does that mean,
You're Welcome? And that one, okay, so that one is, sometimes you meet people who have, like, written an education book, or they're not classroom teachers anymore, they're speakers. And then they present as this, like, I am this guru of teaching.
I am omnipotent. Yeah, I know everything.
Exactly. But they would never come out and say that. You have to remain pretending to be humble. No, I'm just teaching like you, but you should do exactly what I'm saying. So the Teaching Text, You're Welcome, is not a book that will teach you how to teach at all. It's a satire written from the perspective of someone who wrote a teaching book. It got super popular, and it went straight to his head. So it's just like, I am the most wonderful teacher in the world, and you should do everything that I do. So, like, just as an example of what this book is like, the first sentence of the book is, the three greatest teachers who ever existed are Socrates, Yoda, and me.
And me. So I love Yoda.
So that's where we're coming from with right. The Teaching Text, You're Welcome. It's just for, like, I'm a teacher, and we don't have any funny books. Nobody writes funny books for us. So I wrote a funny book for us.
You're a funny guy. Okay, and the other one, the third one, how new is this? A Classroom of One, and that's what you're talking about, mentoring a student teacher, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That one just came out a few weeks ago, A Classroom of One, and that one is about growing the mentor-teacher-student-teacher relationship. And that is, again, I wrote that because it's something that I'm incredibly passionate about, this relationship. And I don't think there's enough material out there for mentor-teachers. I feel like a lot of the time, you're like, okay, I want a student-teacher, and the universe is like, poof. There's a student teacher for you. Here's some evaluations that you're going to do. But that's, like, it. So then you're in this room, and you have this other person, and you're like, I don't know what to do now. And on the other side is the student teacher who's petrified because I have to teach these kids, and I have to work with this person that I don't know who is letting me into their room. And the power dynamic is very screwed up because I'm the teacher, so I have all of the power. I'm in control of their evaluations. I, like, control whether or not they get to teach next year, basically, right? So this book is about how do you take that power dynamic and how do you take this very strange relationship and make it work and make it something that benefits the mentor teacher and the student teacher and the students and make all of that come together. So that's what the book is about.
It's good stuff. And again, Doug's the weird. I just want to make the mention of this again. It's The Weird Teacher, and it's Doug Robertson, and you can look up all these books. He's The Weird Teacher, The Teaching Text, You're Welcome, and A Classroom of One on Amazon. Am I correct? Would that be good, Doug? Is that the easiest way?
Yep, they're all on Amazon. Thank you. Yeah,
cool.
That's great.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure we got that out there so people know just how talented you are. By the way, I have to tell you, when I was a student teacher, I taught history, secondary school, and after about 3 days, the teacher named Mr. Brodsky just literally walked out of the room and left me his 5 classes, and that was that.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, it is. And by the way, that was standard practice back then. That was not unusual, and I'm talking way back then. Okay, but it was weird. I'm glad to hear things are changing out there. It's really, really important. Sometimes people think they got a student teacher and they can take half the semester off because they'll just leave it to the student teacher. But you got to be in there hanging in it. Yeah. Go ahead.
And it feels like there's really two extremes as far as that goes. And obviously, because they're extremes, not everybody, this is not a blanket statement, even though it sounds like one. You've got teachers like that who are like, sweet, I have a student teacher. I'm going to go to lunch.
I'm off.
And you
I'm
have
off.
Teachers who are like, sweet, I have a student teacher. You're an aide now. Go make me copies. And we need to not do those two things, because the real job is you are prepared to step into your own classroom next year. And that's the big, that's like the first thing I say to student teachers when they walk in my door. The goal for us at the end of the year is that you will walk into your classroom all by your lonesome next year and feel as prepared as possible for a first year teacher to feel. You're still going to be panicked because you're a first year teacher, but you will feel like you have some tools.
Yeah, you have some tools. You have a little classroom management skills, et cetera. Let me ask you, and what colleges are your student teachers from? And I'm just curious on that.
My student teacher this year, and I kind of have two. I have my main student teacher and then an alternate who comes in every few weeks. But they're from Portland State University.
Oh, great school. Okay, it's a great school. I knew their Mike Shaughnessy, their math guy, is just an incredible guy. Still an professor emeritus there. Yeah, Portland, Oregon State. I live near Portland, Maine, by the way. Okay, and so my question is, and Portland State is a good school. When they walk into your classroom, do you feel that they are prepared to where they should be to walk into a classroom in 2017?
Almost.
Good.
And this is a weird.
I mean, you can't have all the skills. I don't mean that. But are they prepared, in your opinion, as a teacher, you're going to hand over your class to them, or classes? Are they prepared as much as they can be at that point in your career?
They're prepared with everything except for integrating technology. By and large, we're still you know, that's true for classroom teachers right now too, though. Like, all across the board, we're running.
Yeah, but they went to school before.
The 21st century education, it's been 18 years.
Yeah, they went to school before, okay? And the technology, let's be nice and say 2005, okay? No more excuses about teacher education not preparing students, future teachers, to use technology. That's the way it is. Bingo, end of discussion. It'd be like you went to your doctor who didn't know how to plug in the x-ray machine. That wouldn't make you calm.
Right. Right, and I feel like they are still spending a lot of time on all of the stuff that they spent on me when I was. So they're trying to just get you into the methods programs.
Yeah.
And you know, they're trying to teach classroom discipline, which is a whole other conversation about whether or not you can teach classroom discipline in a classroom without students, without, like, children in it. That's,
without
13-year-olds.
I don't
know if you can.
Right. Yeah, you can.
But I really don't feel like as a whole, because I'm sure there are programs that are doing this, but it feels like as a whole, they are not spending the time that needs to be spent getting these kids into the wide variety of ed tech that is out there.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And like, I literally mean that there should be a university class that goes over, if you are 1-to-1, what can you do? If you have 2-to-1, if you just have iPads, if you have a computer so old that you have to crank it to get it started, how are you using technology in your classroom and covering all of that stuff for a semester?
I couldn't agree with you more, my friend. That to me is I work a lot with a group called AACTE, the American Association of Colleges and Teacher Education. They're a wonderful group, and I talk to deans of schools all the time, and to a person, they're superb. But there is this gap in teacher education, and part of the problem is they don't teach by example. Okay, some do. I shouldn't say that's too much of a blanket statement. You have to teach the way you expect the kids would teach, so they learn by example. Okay, and it's going to work, and it's going to work great. But it's an interesting thing, and you kind of I kind of had a feeling this was going to be a tough question. You have a lot of. Correct me if I'm wrong, Doug. You know, you use the phrase student voice, student choice. okay? The kids are helping to guide their own learning, if I may. And talk to me when a young person comes in and sees that, went to a high school where that didn't happen. Now they're a future teacher. They're in their senior year. And all of a sudden you're doing this. What's their thoughts?
When a student teacher comes to me and they see that I'm trying to implement as much choice as possible, is that what you mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's not the way they were taught.
The program that I'm getting them from has been very good about talking about voice and choice. So most of the time when they come to me, it's, more like, oh, good, you're doing this. But then there's, at least last year, there was this second part to that statement from my student teachers where it was like, oh, good, you're doing this. We're going into other classrooms and we're not seeing this kind of stuff. Yeah. We're being taught it in our university programs. We're being taught about integrating movement. We're being taught about getting more student voice into the curriculum. But then when we go to classrooms to observe, we are not seeing that as much. So we're happy that when we come in here, we're seeing that. So it's kind of this, it's coming back on us as current teachers. It's a systemic problem. It's not as built in as we need it to be. We need to be better so that they can be better.
I like that. That
and, you know, it's a lot
something
of
that's not being used throughout the system. I think that's key because that's going to be the influx of the next great things to come in. That's a compliment to Portland State. I think it's good. Okay. It really
absolutely
is.
And I'm building my army so that all of them come in and they're like, we're doing
weird
student
teacher's
voice.
Army.
That's right.
You know, it's pretty cool. The other thing I'm curious about, I know you are a very creative teacher. Would you say you're a very creative teacher? You have fun.
I would say I'm a very creative teacher.
Right. Yeah, but not everybody is creative. That's A. Okay. Or as creative as you are. Let me say it that way. Okay. B, they're taught they have to teach to the standards, all right? So put those two things together. You want to teach creativity, but you also want to fit it all into the standards. This goes across the whole country, not just Oregon. How can teachers stay creative within the box that they're given of standards?
How do you handle it? I have lots of thoughts on this. First of all, I would disagree with you that not everybody is creative, but then you hedged it and you said not everybody is creative as me, and I really feel like that's...
Doug, you disappeared. Doug, what happened? Maybe he'll call back in. He was just getting on a tear, and he just dropped off. I can't hear him. Maybe you can hear him. Doug? Oh, Doug, it's Larry. Wow. Give me a minute to call back in. This is cool stuff. I never did a show like this on student teaching with a guy who's a great mentor teacher. It's something we should think about. And I remember that when I was student teaching, after about a week, my mentor teacher, which wasn't the term back then, I can't remember what the term was back then, literally walked out of the room, handed me 5 classes, and that was the end of it. But in those days, the teachers were more independent in their classrooms. It wasn't a concerted mission statement and an objective to pass these tests. But it wasn't good. Doug, I don't know where you are, my friend. You're still lit up here on the board. Oh, wait, there he is.
Am I back? Can you hear me now?
All of a sudden, you just
that
disappeared.
Was super weird.
The weird teacher. That's what I'm talking to.
You can hear me now.
I can. Can you hear me?
I can. I could hear you the whole time. It was really weird that I dropped out.
I don't know. You just and the line was still lit on the board, so I don't know what the hell happened. But whatever happened,
I had to turn it off and turn it back on again.
Yeah, but you were talking about creativity.
Yeah, and I believe that everybody is creative, and I believe that everybody is creative in their own way. I think it's really interesting that sometimes we put a box around creativity, like, you are creative, this is what creativity is, which is a very uncreative way of thinking about creativity, because, like, one of the things that I struggle with, one of my weaknesses is math instruction. Whenever I go to a teaching conference, I always look for a session on math, because I'm always looking to get better. I went to a Matt Vaudry session last year. He's the guy who co-wrote Classroom Chef, and it was amazing.
Okay.
It was so good, and I was like, I'm so glad I came to it. So I feel like you give me language arts or science or social studies, and I'm very creative with that. But when it comes to math, I'm trying to be. I'm looking for ways to be creative with that. So while on the other hand, there's other teachers who are very creative with math. So that's one thing that I really feel like it's more about unlocking that creativity and believing that you're creative. It's not like, it's not a switch that you can turn on and off. I believe that if you really want to be a creative person, then you need to be consuming media that is more than Big Bang Theory. You need to be looking for creative music and creative movies and things that are you watch or you listen to and you're like, I'm not sure if I like this. And then you have to do it like three more times and then you go, okay, I don't like this, but I understand it now. Or I actually do really like this. And that kind of mind-bendy stuff, I think, will help someone be creative. And on top of that, there's a lot of bad ideas that become good ideas through use of creativity and through, this is a bad idea, but I'm not going to throw it away. I'm just going to put it off to the side. And eventually it will come back and it will become a good idea. And so it's internalizing and teaching people that this is the real way to be creative. I think about, I was a theater minor in college. And one of the best teachers I've ever had was my acting teacher. And he talked about actors harnessing their emotional life. And I like taking stuff that's not so much teaching and making it teaching. So he talked about actors harnessing their emotional life. And he said, that's why so many actors that you meet are kind of super emotional all the time. And it's because they can't, you can't, if you keep smacking that down in your regular life, then when you need the tool in your job, you're not going to have it because you've smacked it down. And I feel like it's the same for creativity and education. If you keep telling yourself that's a bad idea, that's not good, or that's not even creative enough, which is a terrible thought because it's creative enough for now and you will make it better later.
How do you measure, and we got to go in just a couple of minutes, but you're creative, you like creativity, however you measure it. Do you find the student teachers, once they get used to it, get creative? Once they get used to being
absolutely.
In the classroom,
if you open the door for them, if you open the door for them and say you can be, let's push the limits, then they will go for that. I make the room very safe for them, and I tell them, I'm here too. So I want you to try something that you're not sure is going to work. Because if you break them, you can't break them. I'm here. We will fix them.
Yeah.
We'll put them back together. You have a net. It's okay.
Failure is important.
I encourage my student teachers to do things that they're not sure is going to work because it's okay. They're kids. We screw up one lesson. That's fine. There's plenty to learn from that.
Oh yeah.
But then the second part of what you brought up was how do we make that fit within the standards? I honestly believe that the standards are not that constrictive. It's guidelines, but you could backwards compatibility just about any lesson to fit into certain standards if it's a well built lesson. So it's more about seeing the standards as guidelines. It's kind of like when Steven Spielberg made Jaws. Jaws is amazing because the shark didn't work. So he had to work around certain limitations that he had, and limitations made that movie better. If the shark worked, it would not be as good of a movie. Standards are the shark not working. Standards are limitations that make you be more creative.
I love it. That's great. Doug, we got to go. You're a good guy, man. I got to tell you, student teachers are lucky. So are your kids. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Come back on anytime. Stay in touch. Okay? Thank you, Doug.
I'd love to. Yep.
You're welcome here. Okay?
Thank you.
Have a good day in Oregon, 3 hours behind me. Thanks for it. Thanks, Doug. Bye-bye. Doug Robertson, I want to just tell you, the newest book, you can just look this one up. I like this, though. A Classroom of One, and it's about a student mentoring student teachers. A Classroom of One, Doug Robertson. And it's The Weird Teacher. Just Google it. It pops right up. We'll archive the show at education-talkradio.org. Tweet it out over at EduTalkRadio. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. And thank you so much for listening.